This is Jerry Agar on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Just moments ago, we were talking about an announcement that happened in the last 15 or 20 minutes, and that is that the entire board of Hockey Canada is stepping down. Maybe that's the best step toward, healing, et cetera, and getting things back on track that could happen. We'll get back to that in a bit, but I'm going to take a moment here to talk about another earth-shaking event, and that is the ongoing war in Ukraine, the attack of Russia on that country. And the latest that I see from CTV News reads, Russian forces strafed Ukraine with a fresh barrage of missiles and munition-carrying drones a day after widespread strikes killed at least 19 people in what UN Human Rights Office described as particularly shocking attack that could amount to war crimes. Joining me for the latest, Jack Cunningham, International Relations Professor at U of T Trinity College. Professor, good morning.
Good morning, Jerry. Good to be with you.
Yeah, good to have you. Are we up to the point of war crimes going on?
I think we almost certainly are. These are one of the key aspects of the laws of war is that weapons discriminate between civilians and combatants, and these obviously don't. These are indiscriminate strikes. They almost certainly constitute war crimes, and they're also an indication that. Mr. Putin is rather frustrated at the way this is going on. He's just celebrated his 70th birthday, and here he is bogged down in a war that he'd promised his people would be a piece of cake, and it's not working out that way at all.
I thought it was a war crime right from day one, actually.
Yes, well, launching aggressive war is in itself a war crime.
It always seems weird to me, war crime, as if there's sort of, like, I think if you're in a defensive position, then it's legitimate to do what you have to do. But if you're the aggressor, you're an attacker of a country that wasn't attacking you. I don't know how it isn't just a crime right from the get-go. And I think you're suggesting that it is. And then differentiating war crime beyond the, sort of legitimate shooting of soldiers just seems weird to me.
Yeah, well, there are all sorts of inconsistencies people can point to in the laws of war, but this is what they're understood to be, what they're interpreted as being by most international lawyers, and what bodies like the UN take them to be.
All right. So what's happening here? I mean, is Ukraine, we keep hearing, oh, Ukraine is doing well, and ultimately this is not going to be a victory for Putin, but it drags on.
It does. It does drag on much more than he initially told his people it would. And I think we may look back and see that his decision to mobilize conscripts for the war was a turning point. This is bringing home to people the cost of Putin's aggression. And one scholar, Michael Kimmich, has argued that this really sort of breaks the compact that Putin had with his people, that he would restore Russia as a great power, but that they wouldn't have to sacrifice in the process. That's a pretty hard argument to maintain once the body bags start coming home.
It was a number of years ago now that it happened, but was he emboldened, and maybe the Russian people who were supporting Putin were emboldened by how it seemed relatively easy for them to take over Crimea?
I think that's absolutely the case. The response of the West at the time was relatively weak. And not to put too fine a point on it, he got away with it.
Yeah,
and I think he convinced himself that he could get away with it again.
Well,
he did not bank on the West being as united as it's been in this case.
Jack Cunningham is with me, international relations professor at U of T Trinity College. How effective is the West in this, or is Ukraine just effective at fighting back?
Well, the Ukrainians would be in a bit of a pickle if they weren't getting a constant flow of equipment and training from the West. That's crucial. That's essential to enabling them to fight as well as they have been fighting. It's not the case though that we can simply sit back. We've got to continue with a more or less open-ended flow of assistance in order to keep the Ukrainians in the field.
Well, I opened here with this opening line from a CTV article, which says Russian forces strafed Ukraine with a fresh barrage of missiles, and it was particularly shocking, and war crimes. They were hitting power outages were happening. They were hitting. They hit a school. They hit residential buildings. Is there a point at which just supplying material is enough?
Well, I think the danger is that going beyond that to actually committing Western troops would put them in line for a direct collision with Russia, and who knows where that could escalate. Well, so that's sort of the line that that the West has sort of collectively drawn. But this side of that line, there's a lot we can do. Last week, George Will had a very good column saying Biden should be supplying Ukraine with the most up-to-date drones. A bipartisan group of lawmakers has argued that he should be doing that. Canada should be procuring more military hardware for Ukraine, which is sort of difficult given the state of our own defenses. But we've got to continue what we can this side of that line.
President Biden warned that nuclear Armageddon is at the highest risk since 1962. Was he right? Was he over the top?
I don't think he was over the top. I think there is a legitimate chance of nuclear hostilities. I think it's I wouldn't gamble on it. I don't think it's what Putin wants, and it's certainly not what anybody else wants. The danger is that Putin is not a crafty, cunning strategist. He's a creature of impulses and resentments. And it's possible that in an impulsive moment, he could resort to nuclear weapons and stumble into a conflict nobody really wants.
Is there any such thing as the possibility to make some sort of peace agreement with Putin, or is the takeover of Ukraine the only thing he will accept?
I don't think he'd settle for anything less. And I don't think the West can really settle for anything less than probably his departure from power. I think that's what it'll take to bring this to a satisfactory conclusion.
Well, sometimes in these situations, you worry about, okay, he's gone, who takes over?
Yeah, and it would conceivably be somebody pretty nasty by our standards. But we've shown the ability to live with nasty regimes where they can find their nastiness to their own borders, and in Russia's case we might have to do that again. I mean, we did that for quite a while with Putin before he annexed Crimea and then invaded Ukraine.
Is there any chance that he would suffer a defeat from within? Either he's deposed or he's just really, you know, like Caesar, taken out.
I think that's what it might take, and I think there is a chance of that. It only takes a fairly small group of well-placed conspirators to remove the guy at the top. I mean, as we've seen going back to Caesar.
Yeah. And as we've just discussed, then you worry about who takes over. It seems admirable, the ability of the Ukrainians, from the troops to the leader to just the people in general, to keep up spirit, so to speak, to their willingness to, we're not going to be taken over here.
It is. It surprised a lot of people. It surprised me. I mean, at the beginning of hostilities, a friend of mine who actually is a former war correspondent made jokes about opera singers with Kalashnikovs. Well, these opera singers and office workers and janitors and all the rest are putting up a damn fine performance.
Well, sure, because it's their lives, their country, their families.
Their lives and their country, yes.
Yep. And there is the belief, and before I wrap up here, I wonder if it is a belief held by you, that actually what Putin does not have is any kind of motivated army. Like, they're saying, what am I doing here?
He doesn't have a motivated army. I mean, the dirty little secret about the Russian army is that it's a hollow giant. It is floating on oceans of vodka, and it's a lot of its equipment is obsolete or obsolescent, I mean, historically, even during the Cold War, the Russian military was a far less imposing machine than it looked.
Yeah.
We have to take it seriously and have to take Russia seriously now because they've got nukes, to put it frankly.
All right. Jack Cunningham, International Relations Professor, Trinity College. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Jerry. Take care.
Yep. iHeartRadio, Talk Network.
You're listening to Jerry Agar on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.